Welcome to AM Best Audio.
In a world increasingly shaped by volatility, complexity, and interconnection, understanding emerging economic and cyber risk is not just a strategic advantage, it's essential for survival. I'm John Weber for AM Best TV, and I'm speaking today to Reid Sawyer, head of the Emerging Risks Group for Marsh. Reid, so glad you could join us today.
Thanks for having me, John.
So, Reid, you lead both the Emerging Risks Group and Cyber Consulting. How do you see those two domains converging when it comes to economic risk management in today's landscape?
It's an interesting question, John, because almost anything today is in our economy is digitally driven, digitally enabled, undergirded by technology as we're moving forward. And so oftentimes, what is a can be and what is a technical conversation around the cyber domain needs to be thought of and I think viewed differently from a risk perspective and brought into the broader risk conversations, but not just as a here's what cyber risk means to an organization today, but rather how do we understand digital or technology risk in our value chains and what does that mean for us as organizations? And so to sum it up, John, on this question, we see them as inexorably linked.
Reid, what are the top three economic risks that should be on every C-suite's radar right now, and why are they so urgent?
Yeah, John, it's a great question. It's hard to turn on the news or open up the Wall Street Journal today without a discussion around these issues. I think the first and probably foremost that's on everybody's mind is what's happening with the tariffs, the different tariff regimes, and what the landscape will look like on a daily, weekly, monthly basis as we go forward. The second issue, and I think the biggest economic risk that we're facing in this that needs to be on top of minds is what are the longer term macro scenarios that we need to be thinking of, right? Are we at a risk of de-dollarization? What happens as we start to think about U.S. economy that has always been the stable guarantor of the broader global economic system, if that were to start to shift? And perhaps a third risk in this area, John, that we need to be contemplating, if sticking with this macro theme, is how might the world look differently as this plays out over the next 12 to 18 months? And do we end up in different regional trading blocks that change not only the economics of trade, but also have the risk of creating competing regulatory regimes? And how that will then impact corporations, certainly multinationals, but all of our clients from that perspective.
In your work advising companies, where do you see the greatest disconnect between perceived risk and actual exposure?
It's a fascinating question, John. I think that almost everybody has a strong and intuitive sense for the risks that are proximate to their organization, right? The risks that they're facing on a daily or weekly basis from that perspective. Where we see the greatest disconnect that's coming in is understanding and then mapping what are the risks across an organization's value chain. So I might understand that my perceived risks and have a good sense of that, but the actual risks of what that looks like across my value chain of my organization may be much larger. They're certainly a bit more ephemeral to measure, understand, manage those types of risks. But we do see that while there's an appreciation that risk is not just the domain of that entity, right, of a single company, that we all live in an ecosystem, that delta comes in is appreciating how much systemic risk could impact an organization today. And then for those organizations, but how do they get their arms around that degree of systemic risk and what do they do about it?
Reid, how can organizations better quantify and prepare for gray rhino risks, those that are highly probable but often ignored until it's too late?
Yeah, it's what's that expression is what's new is old again. I think as that expression goes, right, it's really, John, a question about scenario planning. We've certainly read a lot about that in the last couple of months leading into these issues around the tariffs and how companies should be planning for it. But whether or not you're talking about the black swans or you're talking about the gray rhinos, to the heart of your question, it's how do I understand what's in my environment that I haven't forecasted? And I'll give you an example of what I mean by this. We're recently dealing with the general counsel and a CHRO of a Fortune 50 company. And they were asking us to help provide some advice to them on an issue. And we asked the question, we said, you know, certainly we think we've got some capabilities to help you, but we also said, you know, you have this risk identified. What's been the challenge that's kept you from dealing with it for us to be able to better understand the problem, John? And the response was really telling. It was just because we had the risk identified on our risk register, we had never forecasted the impact of that risk on our operations. And therefore, we need help. So there's a difference, number one, of identifying the risks of the horizon scanning and knowing what they are. But for those gray rhinos, it's really forecasting the impacts into the balance sheet or the income statements from that perspective and playing that out across the organization to better understand them.
Now, you've spoken and written about the importance of anticipatory risk management. So what does that look like in practice, Reid, and how are leading companies implementing it?
Yeah, John, very much similar to the last question. Number one is you've got to have better horizon scanning capabilities that are at play inside of an organization. And really what this means in this sense is that we need to move from a static approach to viewing risks of what was the risk last quarter? How does it move up in my risk register? How do I understand what that impact of it is to moving towards a more dynamic view of if this risk were to occur, what would then be the impact on our organization, on our operations, and on our customers? So really two components to that. One is looking forward with the risks, John, but number two is then extending our vantage points to understanding not just what the first party implications are, but what the third party implications are, and then understanding what this does and how this can create risk to plan. The second piece of that I would say is that we need to embed more financial stress testing methodology. We need to be thinking about this, not only identifying those scenarios, but quantifying what they mean and using different analytical techniques to gain intellectual purchase, whether or not it's a gray rhino or a black swan, but as we're moving forward. And the third piece, John, that I think that is critical that we see the leading organizations doing is starting to move from just a view to what's probable and what's likely, which is where most organizations today index around risk, to extending that vantage point to understanding what's plausible. And if I can understand what's probable and what's plausible, and I can think about the distance between them, I now have an understanding of the spread of my risk, whether or not it's narrow or I have a lot of volatility to it. So it's really what I'm suggesting is we move again from a static vantage point to a dynamic and we start to redefine an understanding what those risks look like with different management tools.
Customize your data experience. BestLink now offers an interactive company dashboard that provides company-level intelligence in a fast, user-friendly interface featuring interactive tables, charts, and Sparkline performance histories. Customize the dashboard tiles to prioritize the insurer ratings, data, and analytics that best support your workflow. AM Best. Our insight, your advantage.
Cybersecurity is often siloed from broader economic risk strategy. So how do you recommend companies bridge that gap to ensure a more integrated approach to resilience?
It's really, I think, John, two core actions in that. The first is that, again, everybody understands that cyber can't be purely the purview of the CISO, right? That she's the one that's entirely responsible for cybersecurity in the organization. She might be the lead entity for that entity, but that cybersecurity as a risk is actually owned by everybody in the organization, right? It's owned by the operations teams. It's owned by the chief legal officer, right, that has to deal with any fallout of the liabilities. It's certainly owned by the board from a vantage point of having overall responsibility to that. But I think what's critical in this and that organizations to better bridge that gap is redefining cybersecurity or cyber risk and starting to talk about it is what does digital risk mean to my enterprise? Because once we widen that aperture, John, we start to redefine it. It moves out of just a defensive posture for the CISO and starts to become embedded in the DNA of the organization that business unit leaders now understand what digital risk poses to their reportable segment, and the board can better understand the depth of the risk across the ecosystem. So number one, it starts with redefining the issue set. And number two is we understand there's still a translation gap between this. It's really hard in some ways to move from a technical understanding and technical reporting on a NIST standard of cybersecurity and maturity rating and what that makes sense and how I should prioritize capital against that once you move outside of the CISO's domain. And so we think that it's really critical that organizations are performing financial stress tests around digital risk scenarios, because once you can establish a common denominator to what the likelihood is from a frequency perspective and the cost of an incident, right, it creates a common vantage point for all parties, all of those risk owners I was talking about at the top of that question, to then gain intellectual purchase and make better decisions, right? You have to have a common starting point of and a common reference point for that organization to have those organizations to bridge it.
Looking ahead, Reid, are there emerging risk trends, things like technological or geopolitical or environmental, that you believe are still underappreciated in boardroom discussions today?
Yeah, John, there's probably three that really stand out to me in this. And all three of them are certainly on the board's agenda from this perspective, but important and I think deserving of perhaps more attention or different attention. The first is AI risk. Right, AI is going to rapidly change the way that we think about career pathing, the skill sets of the organizations. It's going to present tremendous advantages to the companies that get this right. The question is do our governance, risk, and compliance systems built for something that is changing so rapidly to be able to measure and manage that risk at the board level? And I would suggest not, that most internal audit teams are not well attenuated to AI risk, that we might not have all the policies that we need to do so. And more, perhaps even more importantly, is do we understand the liabilities that come with those risks? That if I'm using AI in my hiring algorithms, what does that mean from an employment practices perspective? How does AI create risk if it's embedded in my supply chain? And those measurement tools aren't really built for that yet at scale. And so I think there's a maturing in the risk community to be able to catch up to that. And the boards need to be much more in tune with the risk component of AI from that perspective. The second that I would suggest, John, is that is perhaps underappreciated is how fast and where the geopolitical environment could be in the next 2 to 4 years. And that really what it means is I think the boards, and from our work with extensive work with boards over the past 18 months, is suggesting that they need to be evaluating risk over a longer time horizon, that they need to be thinking in multiple time horizons and ask themselves the questions of what could happen and what could play out in that geopolitical environment, as we've all seen how rapidly the world has changed with respect to this in the last 90 days. And I feel like I'm going to leave us end this question, John, on an even more dour note, if you will. But boy, if we're not talking, if corporations aren't talking about the next epidemic and what's happening in the U.S. with H5N1, with avian flu, and the fact that we have almost 500 avian species that are infected, 77 mammalian species that are infected, and the dairy farms that are fighting that, not just the poultry farms. Right. If we're not talking about, did we learn the right lessons from COVID and what we went through, or did we just observe those lessons, right? I think becomes critical that we start to ask ourselves, what does being resilient mean in 2025 and beyond? And I think that perhaps, John, the single biggest risk that we're facing is that we're using last year's risk frameworks, or maybe the last decade's risk frameworks, to be applied in this new volatile and dynamic environment that you've been describing in our conversation. And that maybe presents the biggest risk to companies today, right? Am I still relying on the systems that were built for yesterday's world?
Reid, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Reid Sawyer, head of the Emerging Risks Group for Marsh. And I'm John Weber for IAM Best TV. Thank you.
Looking to get the full attention of the insurance industry? We have the platforms that will do just that. Whether it be AM Best TV, AM Best Audio, Best Review Magazine, or Best Day. Find out more by calling AM Best Advertising Sales at 908-439-2200, extension 5399, and have a great day.